Thessalonians chapter 3 verse 1. And the Apostle Paul is asking for prayer. He's got a church here that love him, and he's seeking to direct their prayer life. Pray for us that the message of the Lord may spread rapidly and be honored just as it was with you. And really, it's that verse that kind of guided my thoughts this morning, this desire for the prosperity of the gospel. Not the prosperity gospel, but the prosperity of the gospel. That it should just advance, that it should go rapidly, that it should be honored. That's his prayer. And it's. But I noticed that as he's writing to this church, he'd planted the church in Thessalonica, as you know. He'd written that first letter to them after he heard news of how they're getting on. They were being persecuted mercilessly. And he writes to them the second time, having heard further news from them. And he writes to strengthen them, really. Because it just seems to me that it seems to be a pattern. And that's what I really want to unpack with you, this pattern. That where the gospel is being preached and proclaimed, and it is advancing rapidly, and is being honored, so too, alongside that, seems to come the backlash, the persecution, the hostility, the resistance. I think if we were trying to chart in British history, the time in our own history where the gospel has advanced most rapidly and has been most greatly honored, we probably have to look to the Methodist awakening in the 1700s. And honestly, if you ever just get the time just to look at it and read something about it, you'll be humbled and amazed by what you read. Thousands of people just coming out, ordinary people coming out in tears, just understanding the love of God, joy unspeakable, these hymns that we sing still, "And Can It Be That I Should Gain an Interest?" Oh, that sympathy with the gospel. And it spread across the country like a wildfire. And it went on for 50 years. But if you read the history books as well, I was reading one of them, it says, the riotous intervention of mobs was more or less a continuous feature over the whole course of Britain. So on the one hand, you've got this kind of remarkable outpouring of the Spirit and an awakening amongst ordinary people and revival breaking out, which thousands of people are being saved. Thousands of people are being saved. But all along, there are people seizing people's property, smashing their furniture, burning down their houses, breaking into meetings, buying a bull and letting it loose in gatherings of Christian worship. Abuse, clubs, stones, insults, rotten, dirty animals, muck being thrown at the preachers. And this went on and on and on and on for the 50 years of the awakening. It didn't abate at all. It's quite interesting. I mean, John Wesley himself was nearly killed a couple of times, once down in Staffordshire, another time in Cornwall. And then, to our great glory and honour here in Wiltshire, Charles Wesley was nearly killed in Devizes. The mob in Devizes seized him and he was nearly killed. Whitfield was nearly killed in Ireland. People did die. Methodist preachers did die. And I think when you look in what happened in Thessalonica, when Paul went into Thessalonica as well, he went to the Jewish synagogue in Thessalonica, he preached the gospel there, he announced it boldly and clearly and proclaimed it. People received it. These people who he ended up writing to formed the church, they received it. But many people didn't. We read how the others were jealous and taking wicked men from the rabble. They formed a mob, set the city in uproar, attacked the houses of Jason, seeking to bring them out to the crowd. And when they couldn't find them, they dragged Jason and some of the brothers before the authorities, shouting, "These men have turned the world upside down, and now they've come here also. And Jason has received them, and they're acting against the decrees of Caesar, saying that there's another king, Jesus." See? As the gospel is advancing rapidly and being honored, people are being exceptionally hostile to its advance at the same time. Now, the World Evangelical Alliance, and I don't know where they get their figures from, and I don't know what criteria they use, and I'm just throwing it out there as a rather unqualified statistic, but they say there's 200 million Christians who are being denied their fundamental human rights in the world today because of their faith, because they stand as Christians. Now, I don't know how to qualify those facts, but that's just kicking it out into play. I'm making the point that something is still happening. This is not something in the 1700s or in primitive times. Today. And you won't be surprised if I rattled off the list of the top countries where the problems are being experienced. North Korea, number one. You hear today there's a Baptist missionary in North Korea from South Korea, planting churches in North Korea. He's been arrested. He's been sentenced to a life hard labor. That was today. And we made reference to Miriam Ibrahim down there in Sudan. And I've got a friend who's from Saudi Arabia, and she's a believer now. She grew up in a Muslim family. And she tells me, she said, these stories, I don't know why this story gets into the news. This is happening all the time. This is happening all the time. And the other countries that we list there is North Korea, communist countries, Somalia, Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia, Maldives, Pakistan, Iran, Yemen. It's something they all have in common, isn't it? It's something they all have in common. And it's very difficult, isn't it, to know what really is going on in a lot of those places. How much of the Christianity there is the Christianity that we would recognize. How much of the motives are political, how much of it is religious, and so on. So it's very, very difficult to really get inside the facts. But we know that people are still suffering for the gospel, that's for sure. People are still suffering for the gospel. Now, if you live in a communist country where the fundaments of the government and its whole organization says there is no God, I suppose you're not that surprised that you're going to have a bit of a tough time when the whole state is stacked against you. There is no God. Everything you say, everything you believe, all your principles are fundamentally flawed. And if you grow up in a Muslim country, especially if you grow up in a fundamentalist Muslim country, you're not going to be surprised particularly, are you, that you're going to have a sticky time, because the Quran very clearly says there is only one God and he has no son. So if you believe and you proclaim that Jesus is the Son of God, you are going to have problems. The society in which you live, the people amongst you live, are going to be stacked against you fundamentally. You're going against the grain. You're going to have problems. But what about us? Let's talk about ourselves. Because I was preaching in the back there this morning, and I didn't see any angry mobs out the back window. I could see Romeo plodding around eating grass. Looking out through the window there, I don't see hordes of car boot sale people descending on us with ratchets that they've bought recently to whatever it is. It's quiet. So quiet. Isn't it? What's going on? What's going on? Why is it so quiet? I mean, I think number one thing we've got to say is that by the grace of God, thanks be to God, and probably due to our Christian heritage and history, we have the rule of law in this country. The reason people don't riot and do all that sort of stuff a lot of the time is because of the rule of law, and thank God for it. Thank God for living in a well-ordered society. So important, isn't it? With a reasonable amount of tolerance, religious tolerance, and those sort of things. We need to thank God for those things, most certainly. But I know that we are less privileged as a community of people in this country than we used to be. We enjoyed a certain amount of privilege at a certain time. Those privileges are being eroded and disappearing, but I'm just not ready yet to sign up to being convinced that I'm a member of a persecuted minority in this country. I'm just not ready to sign up to that yet. But I know this. I could go out into the streets and I could kick up a stink. I could. We could go out into the streets and we could make a nuisance of ourselves. In America, that guy, what was his name? I can't remember his name. I don't even want to remember, I don't think. He was going around with God hates fags. Remember all that, you know? And he'd turn up at cemeteries when they were burying American servicemen and said, this is the judgment of God and all this sort of thing. I mean, I think there's a way you can go about being adversarial and controversialist, and you can focus on certain parts of the Bible and apply them at the most inopportune moments, at the most insensitive moments, and you can annoy people so badly that somebody will punch your lights out. Okay? That might happen. But I think if we went out and preached Christ, and when we do go out and preach Christ, actually in the main, nobody's throwing any stones. Nobody is hurling abuse at us, or very little. It's marginal. It's something you can just brush off. Nothing compared to the sort of sufferings that we're talking about. Nothing. Small things. So what's going on? Has the gospel lost its power? Is it not advancing? Is it not being honored? Is the Lord forgotten us? Has he withdrawn his hand? I'd like to tell you what I believe is going on. You know, Little Britain. I can't remember what she's called, the girl in Little Britain, but she comes out with this fantastic phrase, whatever. Right? That's from Little Britain, isn't it? Go on, correct me. Catherine Tate, whatever. Okay, thank you very much. Right, okay, out of touch minister. What can you do? Whatever. You see, the thing about whatever as a phrase, and we've all come across it now, I'm sure, is that it is brilliantly passive-aggressive. Isn't it? Brilliantly passive-aggressive. You see, you can express your hostility to something in an open, aggressive. You could shout at somebody, point your finger and throw things and do all that sort of stuff. Or you can say, whatever, talk to the hand, whatever it is, right, okay? And express your hostility, express your resentment, express your dislike in a much more subtle manner without ever having to have invested yourself into an aggressive act. You can keep yourself, but you are as hostile as the person who throws the brick. But you express it passively rather than aggressively, okay? Do you get the point I'm trying to make? So I want to just think about that for a minute, because I still think we're in a very hostile situation. There's nobody outside the front door, and the horse is in the backfield. But I believe we're in a hostile situation. And I really hope, please speak to me if you think I'm just being paranoid. Mark, let's just think about what Jesus taught as recorded in Mark's Gospel, the parable of the sower. He describes there in chapter 4 various hazards that the Christian will face. One of the first hazards was just the danger of immediately dismissing God's word, you know, listening to it quickly and then just dismissing it straight away. Satan snatches it away and you lose what you've been given. And the second danger was that you would be persecuted for the sake of the gospel. And in the heat of that persecution, you would just give up. Persecution would rattle your cage so badly that you would just give up on your faith and you'd walk away from it. And we have to pray, don't we, for people who are being persecuted, that they shouldn't just walk away under their persecutions, that they should persevere. But the third category there, seed sown amongst thorns. And those thorns there are described as those who hear the word, the cares of the world, the deceitfulnesses of riches, the desires for other things enter in and they choke the word. They choke the word. And what happens is it proves unfruitful. Those who are sown in good soil then goes on to say, will accept it, bear fruit 30, 60, and 100-fold. So what I'm saying is this. Now, our situation is very different to the situation some Christians are facing right now. But we have to be just as much on our guard. We have to be as alert and as awake as anybody, any Christian in the world today. Because we are not facing mobs out on our front door. But we have got so much peace. We have got so much prosperity. We have got so many opportunities. We have got so much ease. And it'll get you. It can get you just as much as a stone through your window will. I think that's the point. You know, let me remind you what Moses said in the book of Deuteronomy when he was speaking to Israel. When the Lord God brings you into the land that he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob to give you, with great and good cities you didn't build and houses full of good things you didn't fill, and cisterns you did not dig, and vineyards and olive trees you didn't plant. And when you eat and are full, then take care lest you forget the Lord. Danger. Really dangerous. You think of it, don't you? It's like, we've got nothing to fear. Everything's all right. The war's over. It's peace. We have peace. Nobody's disturbing us. We've got a wonderful government. We've got a beautiful country. It's prosperous. We've got no cares in the world. We have a care. We really do have a care in this world. If we're not careful, you know, some of the people I met when I was traveling in the Far East, in countries where the breaching of Christianity into their societies has much more fresh, much more recent, their persecutions are much more kind of vivid in their memories. They're concerned about us. They're concerned about what's going on in the West. They're concerned about what's going on in America. You know, in one sense, you know, when somebody's beating on your door, you know where you stand, don't you? You can see them. It's like more confrontational. There's more adrenaline pumping. Somebody's arguing with you. It's more... But when there's this inertia, when you can stand out on the street corner and declare that there are Martians in space and I was abducted and stuff like that, and everybody go nutter. And you can stand on the corner and you can say that Jesus is Lord and somebody will say, nutter. But it's okay. It's okay. You can be a nutter. That's fine. This is Britain. You can be a nutter. And you can just walk on by. And the gospel is being preached. And people aren't hearing. Or if they are hearing, what they're doing is saying, whatever. Whatever. And they're showing their aggression. They're showing their hostility in this passive form. And it saps your energy and it saps your strength. It saps your spiritual vigor. It's a conflict. It's of a different characters, of a different, what the nature of war, the nature of the history of warfare is that people develop different strategies, don't they? They have one phase goes and then somebody else comes up with something else. And we're in a different phase. But it is potentially just as fatal to the church. And we need to be aware of it. And we need to resist it. And we need to fight it. He's praying here. Finally, brothers, pray for us that the message of the Lord may spread rapidly and be honored just as it is with you. Is that something we should still be praying? Does it still matter? See, ease can make you very forgetful, can't it? When you've got a full tum, sun shining, deck chair, National Trust membership, season ticket. It's all good stuff, isn't it? It's all good stuff. I could fill my days. My favourite TV programmes, Facebook, all the important things out there. I've got to know about the aeroplane, little aeroplane somebody made that flew all the way across the stadium and hit a player on the pitch. So important. 3 minutes, gone. 3 minutes, gone. We invest our lives, don't we? We give our lives out. And I'm not saying, please, let me be very, very clear. I'm not saying that we shouldn't enjoy ourselves and have fun and enjoy the good world that God has given us. I am not saying that at all. I am not saying that at all. Because there is a problem with the Protestant work ethic that you can end up just driving yourself into the ground feeling guilty every time you sit down. I think I spoke about this at the MTH tonight. The 86% is what's expected of us. 86%. That's 6/7. A day of rest. You're supposed to rest. You're supposed to enjoy the good that God has given you. But you're also supposed to work. Stay busy. Be active. Be lively. Because otherwise you can just get forgetful and you can get thankless. You take stuff for granted. This is not an old man's whinge. I hope this is not sounding like an old man's whinge. You get bored. I sometimes think the reason we have wars is because guys get bored. They want to travel. And they can't afford the ticket. They want an experience, an adventure. They want to do something. That's a dangerous place to be, isn't it? That's a dangerous place to be. When people get restless. I want an experience. When the gospel is no longer enough. It's not satisfying enough. To invest my life into the goodness of God in Jesus Christ. and to share it with others wherever, whatever circumstance. It's not enough. I want a big experience. But I'm not having an experience. I get bored and restless. And underneath that, you know, your faith is just sapping away. It's weakening. Peace isn't the absence of violence, is it? It's contentment. Contentment. Are people content? Have they got peace with God? Are their sins forgiven? I tell you, they are in a state of apoplectic anxiety. They are just moving towards the, you remember those games when you used to play, you put 2p in and there's these shelves and they push it down and the pennies fall off. You ever play that? It's awful. It's awful. You know, violent crime is down in this country, so I'm told by the media. And one cynic this morning put their hand up and said they thought that's just because they're massaging the figures. But I'm not so sure. They say the number one reason violent crime is down is because of the emergence of the video game, as it's, or the computer simulated. See, the fact is, you can have a guy there, and he's sitting there on a sofa, and he's chilling. He's relaxed. He's at peace, right? And he's sitting there with a little thing like this, kind of like this. That's all he's doing. He's only moving his thumbs. And he's blasting people's heads off, right? He's taken out the infidel, you know, and he's tooled up. I mean, he's trained now on all the most modern warfare techniques. He knows about, you know, armored personnel carriers. He knows about house-to-house fighting. He knows about how to, you know, tell you, he knows more about war. He knows a lot about war. He knows a lot about fighting. And he's fighting it all out there. And he's not going out on the streets and busting heads. But what happens when the internet goes down? What happens when the electricity goes off? And all those skills and all that adrenaline, there's no outlet, no place to express it. You're going to have some very skillful people out there with very fast reflexes. Very capable people wanting to test their mettle, aren't you? Peace, peace, when there is no peace. That's the point I'm trying to make. That's Revelations, isn't it? Peace, peace, there is no peace. The idea that we've got peace is a nonsense. There's no peace. Because people are not at peace with God, are they? Are they? They're not at peace with God. There is no peace. It's just asleep at the moment. But you know, when somebody's asleep and you prod them and you poke them and it's a dripping tap, and I sometimes think our gospel work is like that. You just annoy them a little bit. You know, it's like that. That's the worst. But at this point, start banging on their door. Sometimes somebody will just wake up in the middle of the night. They'll give you an earful, won't they? The day will come. The day will come. Things will change. Things will change. The Romans had this brilliant maxim. Romans were great at controlling people, weren't they? And the Roman emperors said this. They said, bread and circus. You ever heard that saying? Bread and circus. Basic principle of governance. Keep them full. Give them some bread. Make sure they've got a full stomach. Cheap food. Nothing good for them or anything, just bread. And put on a show. Lots of entertainment. As long as there's lots of entertainment, compelling entertainment, and there's food in their stomachs, you won't have a riot. You can almost get away with anything as long as the people are basically fed and have got something good on TV, basically. And that's the danger, isn't it? Because there is not one of us in here today whose stomach isn't full, right? And there is something good on TV. It's always something good on TV, isn't there? It's always something good on TV. There are so many opportunities. There are beautiful, stately homes to visit. There are walks to take. There's so many lovely things to do. Life is so good, isn't it? It's so good, and we are meant to enjoy it. But, don't forget. Just don't forget. That's the point I'm trying to make. Don't forget. Don't let that inertia just soak over you and get down into your system so that you find yourself like those Israelites who have been warned they could end up there. They've got it all and they've forgotten God altogether. They don't pray anymore. They don't read their Bibles anymore. It's just go through the wheels of habit, maybe, tradition. They've lost their vigor. They've lost their life. It can happen, can't it? It can happen. You just become thankless. And the salt, you know, it's just lost its flavor. And Jesus said, once you get to that point, what do you do with it? Well, you've got salt and you can't season the food with it anymore. Just chuck it away. You just put it for grit on the roads. There's no point. There's no point. What I'm trying to say is that don't think we haven't got a problem. Don't think we haven't got a problem. Nobody's attacking us, but there is a good movie on TV. And Paul is praying that we'd be delivered from evil men. Now, in the past, evil men tend to appear on the back of a horse with a saber or something like that, okay? But if they appear now with a smiling face of just a plethora of entertainments and cheap food, just know, that's what I'm trying to say, just have your eyes open. Have your eyes open. Be awake, be alert, be watchful. Don't lose your savor. Don't stop working. Don't stop working. It's not a holiday. It's not a holiday. These parables that Jesus told, it seems that we tend to sort of, you know, pray for the people who are experiencing violent persecutions. We almost as if we hold them up as being the true Christians who are facing true struggles. But according to the stages of the parables, those who are being tested by wealth are almost in a more difficult and trying phase. And look what's happening to the church in this country. Tell me this is not a difficult and a trying phase. Pray that the gospel, the message of the Lord, may spread rapidly and be honored, even as it was amongst you. He asked for prayer. We've got to pray about it. We mustn't forget. Let me conclude. I mean, I know that we get tired at the end of the day, all the rest of it. I'm, you know, I'm not saying you shouldn't rest and balance your life work balance. You know, I'm not saying all of that. But there is a point at which all our prosperity and our wealth and our peace can creep over the threshold of our Christian discipline, and it can make its little incursions, and we can let it slide in and all the rest of it. And to resist that, there's a cost to that, just as much as there is a cost to standing up to the guy who basically gives you an evil stare every time you talk about Jesus. There's a cost to that. And paying that cost seems expensive at the time. It always seems so costly at the time, even though actually it's usually a very small thing that's being expected or asked of you, just to get up, to go out, to do. There's a sort of natural gravity that makes it feel like it's the biggest deal in the world. It's not a big deal. Buckingham Palace. I don't know what Buckingham Palace is worth, right? But when they bought that house, they bought it for about £2.5 million, which I know sounds like a lot of money. But at the time, and I probably thought looked like a lot of money at the time, it must be, what's the value of Buckingham Palace now? At the time when they bought it, it must be £2.5 million. It must be worth, I don't know, just who knows? Who knows, right? And all I'm trying to say is, to motivate you really, is the cost at the time seems, pay it. Pay it. You won't regret it. Paul says very clearly, verse 3, the Lord is faithful. You get out there, you get in there, you get up, he'll meet you, he'll help you. He'll be there. We've got to respond to him. We've got to respond. The Lord is faithful. Verse 3 through to 5. He can protect you. He can give you persevering power, strength to keep going. I remember when I first started as a Christian, I thought, I don't know if I'm going to make a week of this. I remember then thinking, oh, I'm not sure if I'll make a month. Will I make my first year? Congratulations on your first year of marriage, by the way, at the back there. Good to see you. You think, how am I going to? Well, the Lord sustains you. The Lord sustains you. It's more than enough in Jesus Christ to keep you going lively and active right the way through this life and into the world to come. It's good news, isn't it? It's good news. Let's get up. Let's get in. Let's get at it. And, you know, when we're flagging verse 5, there's no greater medicine, really, I don't think. There's no greater medicine. That's what he prays, that the Lord would direct their hearts. What does he want to direct their hearts into? Because if they're getting bogged down, and in their case, they're being persecuted, but in our case, it's a different form of conflict, but they get bogged down. Think of the love of God. Just think of the love of God. He didn't have to do it. He had it all. But he came. He came. He gave it all up to come down here to be abused and mistreated and contradicted and crucified. To do the work that had to be done. Glory be to his name. Aren't you glad? It says here, and Christ's perseverance. He didn't give up. He was a quiet carpenter. You know, sounds like a nice life, doesn't it? Up in Nazareth, sawing benches, seems all right. If it's not broke, don't fix it. But he set his face like flint. For your sakes. For yours and for mine. And he didn't turn back, and he didn't give up. He didn't flinch. And if you ever feel flagging, just consider him. Consider him and let his spirit enter your heart afresh and anew. I'm not going to dwell on verses 6 through to 15, particularly this whole issue of idleness. But it's interesting, isn't it? It's interesting. This whole matter of idleness. Maybe I'll deal with it another time. If it's true in secular terms, if you don't work, you won't eat. Now, we could have a whole discussion about the welfare state, but maybe we'll leave that for another time, right? But basically, being lazy is wrong, isn't it? It's an offense to what needs to be done and to dignity, the dignity of work, and all the rest of it. Being lazy is no excuse. There's no excuse for being lazy. And these people were getting lazy. They were people getting lazy. So if it's true that we get frustrated and annoyed with people who are lazy and just suck off the system and off the backs of people who are working and all the rest of it, people resent that. How much more then, spiritually speaking, when the church goes on holiday? Whatever. I'm not praying, I'm not singing, I'm not showing up, I'm not going out, I'm not reading. I'm out of here. I've got other stuff to do. And it's strong, isn't it? He says, these people are to be made to feel ashamed. And that's really not a very popular kind of thing to do, is it, to make somebody feel ashamed? But I'd rather feel ashamed if I'm going wrong here than be ashamed when I see him. So I don't mind a little bit of discipline here if it'll help me to get where I really want to be. We've got work to do. This is a hostile environment. We've got to stay busy. Well, these people, they're idleness, I think everybody agrees, was something to do with the fact that they thought that Jesus was about to return, and they sort of gave up going to work because they thought, well, Jesus is about to return, what's the point? There are more important things, and from time to time that happens in history, doesn't it? You know, somebody says Jesus is about to return and everybody gives up their jobs, sells everything, and they all make shipwreck, don't they? It's a disaster. Jesus is coming and nobody knows when, so in the meantime, let's get on, shall we? So when he comes, we've got no reason to be ashamed. Let's just get on. Let's do what we've got to do. And I don't think if we saw a brother or sister drifting off the path out into the thorns, it's particularly loving or kind to do nothing about it and just let them go. I don't think there's anything particularly loving about that. So something has to be done to stir people up, to call them. There is absolutely nothing. At the end of this chapter here in verse 16, Paul prays, "Now the Lord of peace himself give you peace at all times and in every way." In every way. I just want to stress again, there is nothing wrong with peace. Thank God for it. There is nothing wrong with prosperity. Thank God for it. But if you let it master you, you'll lose the most precious thing of all. You have to master it. Like everything else, like bad times, we have to master those things, don't we? Good times, we have to master them too, because the gospel is the most important thing of all. The gospel, Jesus Christ. This peace, peace of a Christian conscience, good Christian conscience. Don't you love it when you read Paul? He says at the end of one of his letters, he says, "I have run my race." Amazing thing to be able to say. I've run my race. He's not reproaching himself. He's sorted it out. He's done what he has to do. That's satisfying, isn't it, when you finish a piece of work? It's done. It's finished. Tidied. I've done it. Run my race. That's a good conscience, isn't it? That's what we need. That's what we want. That's the greatest peace of them all. Good times, bad times, peace with God.